Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We've done it with robotic arm on the space shuttle. We've done it with direct launch of modules.
Prepare for light speed.
On the spaceship, now I'm a space cadet. Big white legend in my habitat. Aiming right at stage like a laser tag. Fuck a rich bitch, having rich set. Smoke a lot of trees, need a weed plant. I didn't take my lean, where to lean at.
Hello, and welcome back to They Might Be Mariners Lookout Mornings Prospect-focused podcast. I am your host, John Troopin, joined today by my co-hosts, Joe Doyle and Kate Prusser. It is the end of summer camp, TM, copyright, etc., etc., and we are into the actual baseball season now, which means we've had real MLB games going, a whole bunch of returns, a whole bunch of real good stuff, a lot of real worrisome
stuff. Some not great stuff. Yeah.
But
this is baseball in 2020. It pats you on the head with one hand and punches you in the face with the other.
It's like a trip to Chuck E. Cheese's.
Now do elaborate on that, because I do need to hear about your Chuck E. Cheese experiences.
You have a piece of pizza, some good stuff, and then the children and the nightmare.
That's fair.
You're saying your chief complaint against Chuck E. Cheese is the children?
No, I'm saying my chief compliment of Chuck E. Cheese is only the pizza.
I was going to say, Joe, I have a great news for you, and it is called Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, well, I have greater news for you, and that's that Chuck E. Cheese delivers their pizza and has been doing so during the pandemic, although under a different name.
Let me make one thing clear. Like, I'm not an enormous fan of Chuck E. Cheese pizza, nor have I ever had it delivered, but if I'm looking for one ray of sunshine, it's that they have pizza. So that's baseball.
Baseball. Yeah, okay, I get it.
But also nasal swab testing every other day.
Yes, you might have been trapped into going to a Chuck E. Cheese, but hey, pizza. We are trapped in the hellscape of 2020, but hey, baseball.
That's right.
I get it.
Kate, I think you may have been joking, but I do need to know on the off chance that you were serious. What is the alternative name for Chuck E. Cheese's pizza delivery?
It's Roscoe's, I think. Roscoe? Wait, hold on. Let me check. Okay. I'm not joking because this was a huge scandal a little while ago. Pasquale's. It's Pasquale's pizza. Because they put themselves on like Grubhub and Eater apps. mm-hmm. with under the name Pasquale's Pizza. And then people were like, what the shit? This is Chuck E. Cheese Pizza. And then Chuck E. Cheese was like, no, no, that's a premium version of our pizza. So I guess there's like only one rat.
I was so hoping you'd just give us like a grown up, like, it's Charles Queso Pizza.
Charles Entertainment Cheese.
Yeah, Charles Entertainment Cheese. Please, we know the mouse's name.
The mouse has children now.
That is a legit thing, and you know I am only on this podcast to spread truth, and there's no fake news to be found here.
Absolutely. Only the cold, hard facts.
Insulted you would impugn my journalistic credibility in this way, John.
I think that's fair. I think it's a good energy to start the podcast with, is a real sort of aggressive attack. Yes. let's build on that. So thank you to everyone. We got a bunch of questions, so we're gonna just start with questions here. Obviously, we're into the regular season now, which means the prospects, or not necessarily all prospects, but the extended 60-player rosters are working at each team's sort of secondary facility. For the Mariners, that's Cheney Stadium down in Tacoma, the home of the Rainiers, as well as the Defiance and maybe other things. There's a lot going on there. However, currently, they're playing baseball, almost literally currently, because as we record this, there's an intra-squad game happening, and I believe Jared Kelnick has hit somewhere between 3 to 5 home runs, and has just ridden a real menace.
It's 2 and a triple, but still, and a single. He was 4 for 4 last week. Last we checked in. He's so mad that he was sent to the alternate train. Which, by the way, did you see the Yankees? And I don't know if this is like an effort to keep people away from trying to go there, but they just call it the alternate training site, like capital A, capital T, capital S, which makes it sound so dystopian sci-fi. Yes. Clint Frazier has been optioned to the alternate training site. Like, what to be experimented on? Like, what is going on there?
A Scranton Wilkesboro Chrono Freezer.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Scranton, and maybe they just don't want to remind people that they're associated with Scranton. Sorry to any listeners who might be from or in or lovers of Scranton, but whew, that's a rough town.
Let's start with Kelnick here, because we got a question on Kelnick. Game 4, when this goes up, will be 4 games into the MLB season. And between camp and the first few games here, certainly, one Mr. Kyle Lewis, who is technically still a prospect, has looked very good. So our question from Chris W. at ZipKidCW.
ZipKid.
Is more likely to stick in center field long term, Kelnick or Kyle Lewis? Even a few weeks ago, this might not really have been much of a question, because Kyle Lewis played center field a fair amount in the minors, but clearly looked still somewhat limited by his multiple knee surgeries. But the Mariners have been playing him pretty consistently. I don't recall actually what if he maybe even is playing it today, which would be again just
I believe
another,
yes he is in yes. center I believe yes he is in center today
indubitably
right. Yeah, so what do you guys think that is a more likely long-term fit for him, or do you think Kelnick has a shot to supersede him if and when he debuts?
I think Kelenic is probably going to supersede him or you know, move him to a corner when he arrives. But that being said, like, I know this isn't like the most amazing take, but I think Kelenic's probably going to move off of center field by the time he turns like 27. He's a really bulky guy, and I don't know how his speed is necessarily going to age. But I think, you know, at that point, Kyle Lewis is going to be 29, 30 years old. So he won't move back to center at that point. But it has been really, really fun watching Kyle Lewis play center field. I mean, the guy is moving better than, I know it's been said, but he's moving better than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that has been maybe for me the biggest revelation of summer camp is seeing, I mean, obviously it's been really exciting to watch him blast the home runs both in training camp and, you know, real counting games. It's been great to watch him do something like he did in the game on Sunday where he just took a pitch. He had a really good at bat against Devinsky and hung in the box, you know, fouled off, I think, a very crucial pitch where Devinsky was hitting the outside corner against him, and he was just able to get to that and tap that foul. And, you know, like, if that's the barrel speed or barrel awareness, barrel ability, whatever you want to call it, I'm less concerned about his strikeout issues, really, because that was a good, smart at-bat, and it was, as Joe pointed out, it was an at-bat he learned from. Like, he had gone down on a similar pitch the at-bat before. So that's all very exciting to me. But yeah, definitely I think the thing that could really help him and also take some pressure off of his bat is if he can play a center field for a while. He can play center field until Kelnick's ready. Kelnick, I think, has beautiful instincts in center, and any of his, I don't know how, I mean, I think the arm is pretty strong. I think he's got more than enough of what it takes to be a center fielder. Would I put him up there with, like, the Kiermaiers, the Lorianos of the... No, like, he's not a plus-plus defensive center fielder, but I think he's better than average. There's Jonathan Clase behind him, if he hits at all, who's been building himself into a little tank over quarantine. So that's, like, your next step down. So there's a pretty exciting run of center. I think we'll be able to watch some competent center field defense for quite some time in Seattle, and that's really exciting.
I will say, we haven't seen Kyle Lewis get tested yet, and that's what I'm a little weary of. Like, I want to see him making a play into the left center field gap and, you know, having to slide or lay out or, you know, do something that is more athletic than just gliding to a ball, because, I mean, he looks incredibly comfortable just gliding to each fly ball. I am not worried whatsoever when he's out there. So I'm waiting for that. And then another thing I'll say about Kelnick is he's just a better athlete than Kyle Lewis is. I mean, watching Kelnick play left field in some of those summer camp games, it was pretty clear. Like, his routes to the ball, his reactions in getting the ball in on time and quickly. He's just a quick twitch guy out there, and I think having that ability in center field is not something that I've yet seen from Lewis, but we'll see. I mean, I would love to see 60 games of Lewis in center field. I think it'd be fun, or, you know, 55 or whatever.
Yeah, honestly, I know you think Kelnick is bulky. I think his arms are bulky, but... And, you know, his upper torso, I guess, is kind of... But he's real fast. Like, he's pretty fast, and he gets good reads. If anything, my concern with Kyle Lewis is he's just so big. I mean, he is huge. 6'5 or whatever. I mean, he is a large human, and I just don't know that he's going to, like you said, have that quick twitch or ability to... And I honestly, I'm fine with not seeing him, like, run into walls. Like, get good reads... Play so you don't have to dive or make a splashy play. Like, I'm fine with that for the time being, until Kelnick is ready.
Yeah, I think that is really the key, is that seeing Lewis have to dive, I don't really want to, and I am going to sort of, like, clench my teeth, hold my breath on that first few. But... Even if how fluid he looks doing that is going to make me feel a lot more comfortable, and we haven't seen enough of it yet. But I think that even just the gliding, as you put it, Joe, like, that makes me feel much more sort of confident about, like, him at least being sort of Haniger like in the outfield, where it's like, yeah, I wouldn't call you a solid or, like, an above average center fielder, but it's not absurd to put you in center field consistently, and especially if you have, you know, some good range on either other side.
Yeah.
That is just fine. Where it's like, you know, you'd probably be better in a corner if you had the means, but you're not throwing your pitchers under the bus, putting Lewis center fielder out there.
No. He's kind of like Michael Saunders out there a little bit, but obviously I think the arm is better than what Saunders ever had, and at the plate, he's already proving to be at least a more impactful bat.
Lewis had a play in center, and this was, I mean, it's play-by-play because, again, we've seen so few, but he played a ball off the fence, barehanded it, and just lasered it in really nicely. It was like the type of play, I believe it wasn't the same as D's where he sort of played it, it bounced up, barehanded it, and lasered it, but it saved an extra base. I want to say it was, it might have been the first game, might have been the second game, but I think Lewis has been strong enough there where it's like you may, it has not so much see like this is the center fielder as it will be like we're kind of rotating these guys through. And if you have an outfield that's Haniger, Lewis, Kelnick, or you know, eventually Julio Rodriguez in that group, like you're going to have an above average defensive outfield now. It seems much more likely.
Yeah, just as a reminder, too, like obviously the splash plays like diving or, you know, catching a ball up, those are the things that grab the defensive highlights. But if you're diving for a ball, that means a lot of the time you didn't get a great break on it. And I remember sitting with Class A at the Arizona Fall League and seeing a player make like what looked to me like a spectacular play, and everyone was oohing and aahing, and Class A was sitting there, and he's like, I wouldn't have had to dive for that.
Like, that's right.
No me necesito deslizar. Like, I don't need to dive. So just a reminder that, like, again, smooth and elegant and gliding and all these things. These things come from having good defensive instincts, taking good routes, and, you know, I'll take that over a dive any day.
Yeah. So let's go to another question on that timeline issue. Talking about Kelnick, talking about Logan Gilbert, some of those top guys who we got to see, as well as some other guys who hadn't necessarily really seen live, or if we'd seen video of them, it was somewhere in Modesto or in the South Atlantic League where your camera's vary in quality at best. So we have a question from Seattle Sports Podcast at C Sports. Oh, hold up here. I need to pull back up the full handle there. That is at C Sports Pod on Twitter. The question is, most likely timeline for top prospects to be called up, as well as possible free agency ramification for prospects depending on when they are called up, like Kelnick's situation. So in that particular circumstance, the most pressing one is in Jared Kelnick, who, if the Mariners started him on the roster this year or called him up in the next few days, because of how the league is treating this season, where they are prorating service time in the majors to the length of the season, it would be counted as essentially a month or so of time in the big leagues to have 8 or 9 days, and that would functionally count for a full year of time on the back end. So the difference between calling up now versus calling him up after that versus calling him up a month into 2021 is up to 2 full years difference, which is very unfortunate, but is what the consideration is there. So are there other guys who do you think is sort of most likely to be next up of sort of that top prospect group of sort of the guys right up there at the top, maybe Gilbert, Hancock, Kirby, Julio, Noel V, etc.
Well, I did a little bit of the math on Kelnick, just so we kind of have an understanding of like what's at play and what you can do here.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Mariners play two more games. So let's say the Mariners get through the Angels series, for example. If that happens, then they will gain a year of Kelenic's service. So he would then, if they called him up after the Angels series, he would then become a free agent in 2026. If they started him on opening day next year, it would still be 2026 because service time at that point, you'd still be in between 0 and 1 year. If they waited until April 12th, I believe it was April 12th that I figured it out, 2 weeks into the 2021 season, then you're looking at 2027 as his free agent year. So, like, if you're going to call him up, you got to just kind of call him up now and expect him to be the guy for the foreseeable
future. Yeah, do it.
But just
get
do
more
it
of him
like,
at the major league level. Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm with I think, the majority when I say I wouldn't call Kelenic up this season because, I mean, do you really want to burn an entire service year of controllability for 55 games or 50 games? I mean, that's a tough pill to swallow when conceivably your entire competitive window is in front of you. Now, like our staff writer Tim Cantu made a good point. If the Mariners are in this thing and they're in the playoff hunt, you know, with 25 games to go, then by all means, call him up and figure out the rest later if he makes your team better. But I don't see that happening. We'll see what happens. As far as the other guys go, like Gilbert, Julio, I mean, I wouldn't expect to see those guys this season at all unless there is a, you know, an outbreak in the team. And, you know, God forbid that happen. But I just can't see a reason to bring any of those guys up and start their clocks now when you have an entire season in front of you next season to do what you want to do.
Yeah, I agree on really all of the guys that they have there. I think Kelenic is in an unfortunate spot, so to speak, where the Mariners, you know, it's not like, well, if it were last year and you were in the same position, that would be one thing where it's like the Mariners are running out clear non players at multiple positions on any given night. Non players, just like non future components, you know, starting four or five different utility players at once. You know, that's not really the situation.
Like what the Orioles are running out any given night. Like there is a difference between what the Orioles are running out and what the Mariners, even if the records look the same on paper, those are not the same two teams.
Yeah. No. So
the base
of
baseball is low.
Right. And so, you know, you have a situation where it's like, would I rather watch Jared Kelenic than Malik Smith? Yes. Is there still a very good reason that you should play Malik Smith because he has been a successful major league player recently and still has all those tools? Yes. So, you know, I think I would love to see Kelenic this year, especially if something like that circumstance where you outlined Joe came up, but I don't think we will. And I would love to see him, I will say, opening day next year, especially because, yes, you know, you're potentially losing out on a little bit of service time there, but so much of this whole plan is you need those guys. You need Kelenic, you need Gilbert, you need you know, the guys that are currently on the roster to be good at the same time. And that generally, you know, sometimes you will have a Juan Soto. Sometimes you will have, you know, a Ronald Acuna. More often than not, guys who are really, really, really good are not immediately really, really, really good. You know, there are plenty of absolute stars who are only okay to start, or they start out really good and then they're, you know, they need to adjust a little bit, but then by the time they're 23, 24, 25, like Jared's super young and he will still have a ton of time to get better. Mariners, you know, if you think this is the guy, you work out some sort of extension, whether that's Absolutely. Now, whether that's in, you know, obviously it'd be amazing if they did it now, but even if it's, you know, what the Angels did with Mike Trout, which Jerry DePoto was in charge of the Angels for his first extension. Like, it's not like he is unfamiliar with signing potential star outfielders who came up out of high school to long extensions. And, you know, he was paid very well in that contract, and it still was probably a huge savings for them. So,
yeah, the I don't only think, question, yeah. sorry.
No,
the only
you go.
Question for me would be if they're going to give Evan White a big long-term deal, like, they've got to be willing to extend one to Kelnick too, right? Like, they're looking at this guy, and this is the face of the future face of the franchise. Yeah. So the only question for me is, does Kelnick still hold out some dream of one day playing for his hometown Brewers, or does he really believe that he's going to be the guy in Seattle, and he's going to be the one who helps rescue this franchise from its years. So it's a little bit of salesmanship. Like, they have to make sure he's really happy. They have to make sure he loves it here, and that he an appeal to his very particular personality trait. Like, if you tell Jared Kelnick, you are the savior and you're going to be the face of our franchise when we win a World Series, I think he would respond to that.
Yeah.
So,
John, you brought up a really important point in kind of talking about this Kelnick ordeal. We, as the Mariners, have to give Malik Smith at-bats because he has 3 years of controllability left, and all of those are slated to be with the Mariners. If you all of a sudden put this guy out there once or twice a week, he's going to rot, and he's going to lose his value. So if you use 2020 as an opportunity to give him 5 days a week in the field, and he somehow goes out and, you know, steals 30 bags and hits 270... well, then, you know, maybe the Mariners have some sort of, like, Manuel Margot type trade up their sleeve for this next offseason. Because if you eliminate his value entirely, you're stuck with him. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that as he has no value. You can't move him. And there's probably not going to be space for him, certainly not in 2022, but in 2021 either.
Right. Real quick, I want to touch on just some of the other guys on there, just kind of a more vague timeline. But
wait, I want to say one thing about Kelnick go ahead. First. Sorry.
Yeah. No, go.
If Kelnick every day, I mean, this is like a wild outcome. This probably won't happen. But if Kelnick goes out there every day and is hitting 2 home runs off of a variety of pitchers, including your MLB experience guy, if he puts up at-bats every day like he did today, and he's just consistently outplaying his peers, I feel like you have to reward that. Like, you, what developmental purpose does it serve to just leave him there? Like,
or you have to pay him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, give him an extension, bring him up, give him this weird dress rehearsal year that the rest of the prospects are having. Like, you know, this is a good year for Evan White to get his first taste of MLB. I think he goes to all these stadiums, he gets to play in front of them. Yeah, it's like a dress rehearsal. There are no fans. Like, you can just focus on the game, and then you have a level of comfort. And he's going to go back next year and already feel like a big leaguer while still kind of being a rookie. So, I don't know. For me, it's just like, I don't think that the service time is so important unless you think Kelnick doesn't want to stay. And in that case, I think you have a way bigger problem, which is that you have not pitched the franchise effectively to him.
Right.
And then the years don't even matter because you're just trying to hold on to him. And why don't you have a product that's good enough that he wants to stick around for it? So I don't think that's their problem. So why not? Anyway, that's my thoughts
on the matter. And I think even if Kelnick's not necessarily interested in signing an extension now, if he wants to come up, play, prove that he is a legit big leaguer, and then you know, obviously the Mariners have to pay him more money, which if he is as good as they think he is, they should, so that he will stick around and be that face of the franchise, you know, that sort of cornerstone, as you said, Kate, you know, that paying
it's not
really
my money,
good players, like, who want
pay your stars. If you think he's a star, pay your star.
Yeah. And keep, you know, I mean, yeah, that, like, obviously, you know, it's getting way ahead of yourself, but, like, if you're if you think this is the centerpiece of the organization's success in the next decade, which they clearly do, and probably, you know, he needs to be, realistically, in many ways, you know, that's someone who you should be preparing to pay anyway. So... Yeah, I think...
Like, at what point has Kelnick showed yet? He's only been a Mariner for, you know, what, 2 years, but at what point has he ever showed that he's not the guy? I've never seen, even when he's become
more guy-y.
He's become even more the guy with every single passing day, exactly. So,
regarding the pitchers, just real quick, I think there's less... There are times, obviously, where there's some service time shenanigans with pitchers, but I think generally it's less common, and I think there's sort of more legitimacy with regards to Logan Gilbert on. You do want him to really refine his off-speed pitches so that when he's coming up, he's as sharp as possible, and I think he would have been up this year. I mean, it was very likely he was going to be up this year, so I think he could very well be a guy who starts the 2021 season in Seattle or is there very soon. And especially college guys, you know, you kind of want to get them up sooner anyway so that you're having them pitching in the pros for more of their sort of physical prime. So I think for him, and then you kind of look at Kirby and Williamson. Kirby maybe a little quicker than Williamson, but just kind of Hancock. A couple of years. Yeah, and even Hancock. You know, I think Williamson has a little more sort of development that I would imagine they'll need to see from him just because he's had more injury issues and has had, I think, less sort of dominant experience in longer
I think Williamson's starts. Repertoire, too, is one that takes a little longer to... totally refined because it's so heavily based on the off speed, the curve. I mean, everything is kind of centered around that beautiful curveball. So,
right. Yeah. I think you probably look at it and you say not next year for Kirby or the, you know, that whole group, but
it's also
but you could
amount
probably
of
see him the year after that.
Amount of time needed to develop that third pitch too. Like, I mean, even with Gilbert, it's been, like, a process. With pitchers, I feel a little, like, position players, I'm always like, go ahead, as soon as you can. Like, throw them in, especially with this weird short year. I feel exactly the opposite with pitchers, like, with this weird short year and with guys turning up hurt. I mean, we have Verlander hurt. We have Kluber hurt. Like, it's a rough time to go out there after not pitching for 4 months or whatever and
be... That's a really good point.
Throwing to the best players in the universe. So, yeah, I'm all for leaving everybody down as long as possible and just kind of running this year with bounce back candidates and guys who, like, maybe, again, like Dunn and Sheffield, like guys who will really benefit from having this dress rehearsal year.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We got another question from Kepler Swanson, at Kepler underscore Swanson. And it's a quicker one related to Kirby as well. Has anyone seen George Kirby throw in camp or in Tacoma yet? And I can't remember, Kate, I believe we didn't do recaps for the sort of untelevised games, but I believe George Kirby threw in one of the weekend games briefly. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's seen him throw, I assume it's like beat reporters. It's not us, so we're hoping to get some credential at Tacoma at some point. Yeah. The spots are really limited. Yeah, we have in the past. They have like 7, I think. So obviously it's all the big guys right now while the team is on the road. Hopefully once they return to T-Mobile, there will be some space and maybe we'll get a chance to see Kirby and then Williamson. And then Campbell is honestly probably even more than those other two, because at least we can pull up like some footage from Everett, or there were people who saw them in Everett. Campbell to me is the total wild card. Have not seen him at all. Didn't threw a little bit in the summer camp, but you know,
yeah,
really
had a
nothing
couple,
that.
But yeah,
I saw Kirby a couple times in Everett, but I mean, pitchers from one year to another, I mean, they become totally different creatures. Look at Logan Gilbert. I mean, he was totally different than as advertised when drafted just a year later. So, like, I don't know. We need to see George Kirby and Brandon Williamson and Isaiah Campbell, like, live before we should probably make any assumptions of where they're at.
Right.
But I would assume every single person we've just listed will start at AA in 2021. I would think.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that they're going to be ready, but like, if you draft a 22-year-old and then he's 23 in this year, and then he's 24 the next year, like all of a sudden these are high college draft picks at high A.
I think they've been pretty set a guy at one level and wait till they dominate with their position players. But they started Logan Gilbert last year in West Virginia. And by the end, he was dominating AA. You know, I could very well see. I get what you're saying. I don't think it would be outrageous, but I do think my guess at least would be, I think you see a fair number of them in Modesto, and then quickly sort of push up. Just as in 110 in that group as well. If they're performing, in part just because. It makes sense with the timeline of the guys they have in front of them. I think AA does make more sense just because that's where, you know, they had most of those guys who would have been in AA this year will probably be in the bigs, or should be in the bigs or AAA. So, yeah. All right. Let's go on to, a question, from, Curtis Christensen at CurtisC_24 on Twitter. And this is a comparative question here, but do the Mariners have the best group of prospects among AL West teams?
Ooh, this is a good one.
Yes,
first
Curtis.
First of all, though, yes, Curtis, there is a Santa Claus. First of all, let's do a roundup. Let's round up the prospects from the AL West. The Angels. Let's start with them, because I think if there's anyone of this group that has an argument against the Mariners, I think it's got to be the Angels. Do you guys agree?
I think it's the Athletics personally, but
I would have also said the A's. Although,
but the Angels have. They're super top heavy, so you got that, you know.
The A's are also, I mean, it's they have much more in their pitching than they do in their position players, and a number of those guys are at the big league level now. So
yeah.
Like Puck and Lizardo. So yeah, well, I think the Angels compare best.
I don't think the Astros
or Rangers are.
The easiest way to do this is to start at the bottom, and the Astros are a tire fire.
Yes,
so,
the Astros. Let's talk about the Astros.
They have Forrest Whitley, and on to the Rangers. No, but in all seriousness, like Forrest Whitley, we don't even know if, like, he was broken last year. He was horrible last year. So terrible. So we're gonna have to see what he even is, but like honestly, there's almost nothing behind that.
It's almost
maybe
like it's a
Abraham
total
Toro.
like, it's a mismatch, I think, with Forrest Whitley's personality in the Astros. Like, they don't seem particularly happy with him. He doesn't seem super happy with them. Like, I don't know if it's just, like, a clash in pitching philosophy or personal nature or whatever, but, you know, he's had some PED suspensions, although not really PED. It was maybe just, like, a stimulant that he took to get through his driving time. But we've heard, like, maybe some makeup questions, although who's asking those makeup questions? It's weird. Weirdly, too, Whitley is close with some of the guys in our org. He and Penn Murphy are really, really good friends.
Well, they were teammates in the AFL, right?
They were teammates in the AFL, yeah. And so if you... I really like Penn Murphy as a person, and I think if you like Penn Murphy, that says more good things about you than whatever these other... So, anyway, it's a curious situation, but I agree with you, Joe. Like, there's just nothing. Kind of not a lot behind that. Maybe... Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got a bunch of pitching prospects. The Astros prize pitching prospects who throw 100 with 40 control. I say this over and over again, but... They do. Yohansi Torres might be killer, but like
he's, you know, so far away though.
I just watched him in the AFL throw balls at the backstop. So yeah.
They've got like Brian Abreu and Christian Javier who frankly they impressed me last night, but I don't think they're starters. I think that they're probably gonna be relievers, and so
yeah.
You know, like Abraham Toro is fine. Like, he's fine. Like, he's...
Kyle Tucker is going to be super annoying. Not really a prospect, he's not really but a prospect he's going to be anymore, super, super annoying.
He's going to be really good when Reddick or Springer leaves this year, but...
Yeah.
I mean, as far as, like, strictly prospect rankings go, the Astros are one of the probably worst three teams in the league, and it's only going to get worse because they don't have a first or second round pick next year. And I can't see the way that that team is constructed. Oh,
I forgot that it was next year, too. I thought it was just this year. That's
no.
That's right. It's next year, too. Mwah! Yeah.
They did draft Victor Maderos, who was, like, he's fine. I had a second-round grade on him, but he's easily 5 years away. This is not the type of roster that's constructed to move pieces for prospects. Like, this is their window, and it's just, is what it is. It's kind of Seattle in 2018.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. But the Rangers
let's talk Rangers.
They're a little they're bit interesting. Better.
They are weird, because
that's fair.
They have a number of guys who it's like, man, if they put it together, or man, if they finally get healthy, you're looking at somebody. But so many of their guys, literally for the last decade, and they've actually had a fairly consistent sort of leadership. So there's a little bit more to sort of judge on that, I think. But they have had so many guys come up with very deserved hype and potential and not really transfer that into big league production. You know, I mean, Nomar Mazara, Rougned Odor, you know, Joey Gallo is getting there now. But you know, Jerickson Profar.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And they have not been able to develop pitching the way that they, you know, they have had a lot of guys who have been fine looking, but like Joe Palumbo kind of looks like just a guy. Like they've
Hans
really...
Krause has the crazy head whack and is hurt. That's the
and
other
is hurt
thing
again.
Too is
I mean,
all
it's
their guys
insane.
Are hurt.
Insane. It's insane. So they have those guys, and then they have these really, really impressive physical guys who, you know, if one or two of them turn into something, you know, Shurton Apostle or however his name is pronounced. I've never actually said it out loud, but Shurton Apostle. That sounds a bit better. Apostle. Just 6'4", you know, infielder, really impressive power, really impressive, sort of skills, but he's quite, you know, he's still a ways away. You know, their top prospect probably
Leody Tavares.
Leody Tavares is like, he's in the big leagues now at 21, but he's also like been super inconsistent relative to his physical tools.
Calhoun, they have Calhoun, right?
They do have Calhoun, who
he's
is hurt, and
too,
also,
though.
Yeah, I mean, he's technically not a prospect anymore, but, you know, he's hurt and
probably
probably a DH, which is also what Nick Solak is, who they traded for.
Solak is just, like, he's just Nick Franklin or like Brad Miller. I really don't think.
By the way, when that trade happened, there were a lot of people yelling that the Mariners should have traded Encarnacion for that. But apparently, they wanted, it was the Rays, right?
Yes.
Yep.
The Rays wanted us to send Cal Raleigh along with that. And if we had traded Cal Raleigh and Edwin Encarnacion for Nick Solak, my head would have flown off.
Yeah.
Which
I'm
they
sorry.
Were never doing, but.
I have had enough of these, like, utility prospects that have can't miss hit tools, and that's all Nick Solak is. Like, he's a 55 hit that can bounce around. He's Brad Miller, he's Nick Franklin, he's, you know, all of these utility types that never find a home. And like, I think Seattle, like, as a fan base, has been burned by that profile way too many times now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So those two are a little bit, you know, a little ways behind.
Oh, the A's. Sam Huff. Sam Huff. I do like, sure. I really like Sam Huff, who's
Sam Huff
a
is,
catcher
is,
who
like
can
Sam
actually
Huff
hit.
Too.
I think he's their best prospect. I like him more than Josh Young.
Yeah.
But.
He's got more power. In my opinion, I think he's got more power than Cal Raleigh for catching, which is saying something.
I think that's fair. So we got the, I mean, it's at least a reasonable comparison.
They're similar profiles. Although I think Cal Raleigh is going to be able to stay behind the plate. I don't know if Sam Huff is. He's like 6'5".
Yeah.
He's a big boy.
He's so big.
Okay, so Oakland and the A's, or Oakland and the Angels, rather. Just Oakland's sort of more straightforward, you know, has a few fabulous pitching prospects, and then kind of a lot of miscellanea.
Yeah.
You have to count Sean Murphy, even though he's like their starting catcher this year and will run out of rookie eligibility or run out of prospect status.
Yeah,
but
he'll graduate.
He's someone who is,
you know, solid. I think will be a solid catcher for them for quite some time.
And they just shut down AJ Puck again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shoulder strain.
So, like, this is the second time that's happened with him. So, and Lizardo has been a glass palace himself. So, we'll see. I think Lizardo could be an ace. Like, he pitched the other day and it was nasty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lizardo is nasty. If he can remain healthy, he is absolutely a huge problem. So the Lizardo Murphy battery is not one that I enjoy the idea of facing. But like, Joe, I'm surprised to hear you say this because I think you said you don't like the like super utility hit strong hit tool guy. And I mean, I think that's what Nick Allen is. Like Sheldon Noisy is a DH. I think that's what Logan Davidson is in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know. I see a lot of like scrappy little white dudes. That is their prospect base. Very Oakland A's.
I did like Logan Davidson in the draft, but that was primarily because that college shortstop class was just vomit worthy, and he was the only one with
El Garbo.
Yeah, he was the only one with upside with the bat, and now he hasn't translated it into pro ball. Kind of like how he struggled in the Cape prior to the draft. So, but yeah, I do like Sheldon Noisy. I think he could be, you know, a decent Dylan Moore type. But my only comment on that was like, I'm just tired of acquiring them. I'm tired of like throwing them out there and kind of seeing what you've got. I'm really just a fan of plug and play prospects like Jared Kelnick, who has a position, who has a skill set, who, you know, you kind of know what you expect when you bring him up. And I don't know. I'm kind of tired of putting infield prospects just wherever we're devoid on the infield, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, very much so.
Sedlong's another one. Sorry, he's got a concrete spot now, which is good. I hated him in left field. I'm glad he's at second base.
Yeah, I think it suits him better. He's got good quick hands. He's got good arm action for an infielder. He's just, you know, a little shakier. Yeah,
just,
and it could very easily improve. So tell me
about
the Angels.
Let's talk Angels. Let me make my case for the Angels.
Yeah.
My case for the Angels is they have arguably the best prospect in all of these divisions with Joe Adell. Sure. Whose strikeout numbers continue to concern me, but Kyle Lewis has taught me to learn to let go of my K percentage concerns. there are lots of ways to be useful, and he is, and I mean, I gotta respect, like, all the prospect writers who are just salivate over him, like, see through my Angels hatred momentarily, and grudgingly admit that Joe Adell is probably the best prospect in the AL West. Then you back that up with a ton of other position players, like Brandon Marsh is very solid, I think. He's Jake Fraley, but if Jake Fraley was actually hitting, Jordan Adams is pretty exciting, very high variance, which I feel like is a complaint you could levy against the Angels. Jam Jones, Jeremiah Jackson, they sure love their alliteration, and guys whose names start with J. I always struggle to remember them all, but I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of upside. There is a strong potential that guys could not work out. Griffin Canning looked pretty nasty when we saw him today. The control looked like it fell apart. I still don't know that I believe the Angels can develop a pitching prospect, but there is...
He graduated too, though.
That's true. He will graduate this year, but...
He threw like 100 innings last year somehow.
I mean, he's still young enough that when I think prospect, functionally, guys who are going to be a problem for us in the future, right? Guys who are not like rentals or here for just a couple years, but like long-term potential extension candidates. I think there is a lot of high variance, but my argument against the Mariners has always been like they take the safe college players. They don't really roll the dice. The A's have been burned on rolling the dice. Hello, Kyler Murray. The Angels, I don't know that we've seen it quite yet, but it's very annoying. Their ability to take Luis Renjifo, and who I think maybe Tampa Bay possibly fixed, but now he's like a stalwart in their lineup. Like, I don't know. For me, I think this collection is more impressive than Oakland's just because of the higher upside.
Here's my counterpoint to the Angels. I do like Joe Adell a lot. I don't know if I would take Joe Adell over Kelenic just because I think Kelenic brings more tools to the table, personally. I know Adell's are louder, but I think Kelenic's a more complete player. I do like Marsh. I think he is just a half a tick better than Jake Fraley in every way, but they are similar.
Big.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, what Jake Fraley's ceiling could be, I think Brandon Marsh is a full point better on just about every scale.
Yeah.
I like Jordan Adams. I like Jeremiah Jackson. And Reed Detmers is probably going to be fine. But after those five, it's so bad. Their top prospects are, it's so top heavy that I'm just not sure if they have really like anybody else. Like Chris Rodriguez and Patrick Sandoval should pitch this year, but like they're both number fives and they're both in the top 10 prospects for that team. So yeah, I mean, they've got some guys at the top that are pretty exciting, but I'm just not sure they're like they're where Seattle was a couple years ago when we had, I think 2 years ago when we had Julio Rodriguez and Kyle Lewis and Evan White. And then it was like, who else? It's just so top heavy. So that's, I think, where the Mariners really differentiate themselves in the AL West is, I mean, Kyle Lewis is the 10th prospect on the team. The top 10 is all big leaguers, in my opinion. So, and Jake Fraley's 11. So I just think the depth and the star power at the top. I think Seattle is head and shoulders above the rest of the teams in the AL West, but there are some dudes like Lizardo and Adell that are gonna you know, rival the Kelenics and the Julios.
Yeah, I think they are sort of a mirror, or an inversion of Seattle in many ways, with those sort of extremely toolsy guys, high ceiling, sort of lower floor, and then a bunch of pitchers who are very much geared towards getting to the bigs more quickly. So I am curious to see if, especially if Seattle's sort of much ballyhooed pitching development can give them a bit of an edge there, which,
oh, yeah. Just in case it wasn't clear, I definitely still think that the Mariners have the best collection of prospects in the AL West because they take elements from all those different systems. Like, they've got the pitching depth, but then also the development that the Rangers both do and do not have. They have the utility guy types that the A's have. They have the superstar potential that the Athletics have. And they've got guys who can just hit, like Jared. Yeah. I mean, it is too heavy to the pitching side, but we'll just trade with the Padres for some of their position players. Because they can't develop pitching, so ba-boom, problem solved.
There you go. Okay, well, let's move to a question, sort of series of question here, basically stemming from at Joe Vieira on Twitter, Joe Vieira, local reporter, wondering generally, is Jose Marmolejos a prospect? And by the strict sort of definitions of most prospect lists, I believe no, he is not, due to age and other sort of issues there, or not issues, but specifically by age. But ostensibly, he's made his MLB debut. He's someone that the Mariners seem to see more in than other clubs have. Is he somebody who could make a space for himself long term, or is he more just someone filling a space? Or, as Kate put it, is this anything?
I think
that's a David Letterman reference for those of you who are very, very young.
Yes, that I was really hoping that someone would explain what that was, because it looks great. Yeah,
it's a David Letterman show bit that he used to do where it was called "Is This Anything?" and the curtain would lift and there would be something weird going on behind it. And you had to decide if this was anything.
Now, Colin O'Keefe also did respond yeah. So that is Will It Float, which Colin O'Keefe recommended. Also a David Letterman thing. Okay, wonderful.
Yes.
So will Jose Marmolejos float, I suppose, is the question.
No. The question is this anything with Jose Marmolejos, which I have to say, like, long-term, probably not. Like, he's had his struggles in Lidom, the Dominican League, and, you know, I think he's really great. I love him as a person. I think he's perfect for this year. And he's perfect to kind of be filling space during this time. And then I wish him well beyond that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe he unseats Vogelbach if they're really that unhappy with Vogelbach. If he proves he can hit. That's, like, I think the best case. But he doesn't have a ton of defensive versatility. Even though they are, you know, bravely trying him in the outfield, I don't think that's a necessarily great place for him. First base, DH. So, we'll see. The other answer to will this float, does it float, is Dylan Moore, and the answer is yes.
All right. No question. No follow-ups necessary.
No follow-ups necessary. If you look at Dylan Moore, you will understand why he floats. It's his booty.
That is someone's new ringtone. Thank you, Kate. Okay, let's go. We got a couple more questions. We got a pair of questions that I'm going to sort of push together here. One from Anders Jorstad, staff writer at Anders Jorstad on Twitter, which is, do you think that we'll notice a difference in development next year between players who made the 60-man roster versus those that didn't? Say, Isaiah Campbell, who is on the 60-man roster, versus Devin Sweet, or something similar, who pitched quite well in multiple levels but did not make the 60-man roster. And we got another question similarly related to the development issue from 9 at Kyle Lewis Goat emoji, baseball emoji, at Seattle _09 on Twitter, which is, if Kelnick is crushing our pitchers down there, at what point does that hurt everyone's development? So basically a couple developmental questions, what the value is for being in that alternate site, ominous location versus being at the being at home with maybe more versatility, but not necessarily the opportunity to actually work live at bats and things like that.
I mean, next year is going to be really interesting because it's kind of inferred at this point that minor league contraction is going to begin to take shape. Mm-hmm. So as painful as that is to see a bunch of minor league organizations lose affiliation, I think it's going to kind of parse out, some players, unfortunately. I think you'll start to see a different construct in minor league baseball next year where the most, big league ready players are going to occupy AA and AAA, and then you're going to see the younger kids at high A, and if there is short season, So I think a lot of the guys that we see right now in the alternate site are gonna be in AA or AAA for the majority of next year, competing against similar type players. Whereas high A, and if there is a maybe extended spring training team, it is gonna be a lot of the guys that are like 19 and younger. So yeah, unfortunately, there is probably gonna be a talent gap. But if I'm just projecting, I think it's gonna be separated by minor league ball clubs.
I think a lot of it will have to do with how people are preparing and performing. I think the guys who aren't invited to the site necessarily, like, obviously, they've been kind of told directly or indirectly that they're not organizational priorities. And I don't know that that sits well with a lot of guys. And I think some of them will come back and be really motivated by that and motivated to prove people wrong. And I know that a lot of them are really getting after it in quarantine. And I think that there will be a pretty clear, I'm so interested to watch those first few spring training practices, games, because I think it's going to be pretty clear immediately who was putting in their work and who was kind of taking it easy. And I think there's going to be some shifting because of that. Guys who were maybe like just a little bit behind are going to leap ahead. John and I just recorded a podcast. Sadly, it's having some audio issues, so we're waiting for that to come through. But with Jared Bayless. It is spelled like Gerard. Sorry. This is how I keep the various Jareds separate in my head. He's spending his quarantine really, really getting after it. He's up to like 90, into the 90s, whereas he was before sitting at 89. And, he's just really taken this time as a challenge. And I think those guys are going to come back and they're going to open up eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really hard to see how you can necessarily get immediately ahead by not being in the 60 player group, just because simply the organization's eyes are not on you, whereas the organization's eyes are on the guys that they have there. But there are a number of players who, the opportunity to focus on getting stronger or improving velocity or improving a particular pitch isn't the worst thing in the world. And just what will be more important is getting stronger, getting sort of smarter, and then coming out and getting a chance to show that. I do think, to the second question, I don't think Kelnick sort of rocking some of the pitchers down in Tacoma is going to hurt anyone developmentally, because I think if you can't get a guy who was good in AA out, that's going to be a much more significant issue longer term.